Welcome to Pets Tell the Truth. This program is dedicated to understanding our animal companions on a deeper level. I'm Dr. Agnes Thomas, psychologist and animal telepathic communicator. I'll be your host as we listen to what our animal friends are saying, and as we appreciate the way they view the world, their missions, and their spiritual insights. Today's show is brought to you by Garnett Publishing in Cleveland, Ohio. Garnett is calling for finished manuscripts, so if you have a manuscript you would like to share and see in print, contact them at www.garnettpublishing.com. That's Garnett with two T's. Or you can telephone them at 216-458-6100. They are the publisher of my book, Pets Tell the Truth, and my Animals Tell the Truth wisdom cards, which are available now everywhere. Tonight, we will be talking with Beverly Kiss. She is a breeder of alpacas. She's going to tell us a little bit about the origin of the alpaca in the United States, because they are foreign to us, and their personalities, their spirituality, and the use of their fur in the clothing industry. Welcome to the show, Beverly.
Thank you.
Will you tell us a little bit about the background of the alpaca?
The alpacas are originally from South America. They live in the Andes, and we have imported them in 1984. So they've been here approximately 22 years.
So before 1984, there weren't any alpacas in the whole country?
Not in the USA, no.
Okay, tell me, are they a protected species?
Well, they are protected, and we've cut off the importation, and the reason for that is to keep the business to flourish. They're all DNA tested, and our breeding program is controlled by only having alpacas in the U.S. breed with one another, and there's approximately 60,000 now. So the business has become, the husbandry business is what the farmers are interested in that they breed the females to have more babies. Mm-hmm. And in about 6 or 7 years, then our fiber market will grow and be much better so that we can buy sweaters and hats and et cetera.
When you say the fiber market, the fiber meaning the animal's fur?
The animal's fur. We shear once a year, and it's usually, in Ohio, it's in the spring, so that the animal is cooler in the summer, and the fiber is, we have a co-op that purchases this, and we get points for it, and then we can buy product, or you can sell it yourself. Each farmer can sell it themselves as well.
Okay. Are there a lot of regulations regarding alpaca?
No, there aren't a lot of regulations. The benefits are why people are going into the market. If you become a farmer, your agriculture and your taxes are less on your property. And so it's a gentleman farming business. You can have them right outside your window and watch them grow, and you can buy two alpacas, two pregnant females, and then in 12 months you'll have four alpacas. And if you have four girls, then your business grows even better, because then you can have four pregnant females. If you have boys, then you can hope that one of the boys will end up being a grand champion, and he can continue with your breeding process, and you can also stud him out to other farmers.
Tell us a little about their fiber and the kinds of things that are made from it.
Well, their fiber is as soft as cashmere, and most spinners are excited to get it. My friends certainly are excited to have some of it to spin and to make a garment, because it's so soft and it's warm. It's warm like wool, soft like cashmere. A lot of people will add merino wool to it, and that prevents the elbows or the collars from wearing out, because it is a lifetime garment.
So there are certain things that they mix with the fiber, like at the elbows?
Well, you can mix with your fiber If you mix merino wool, which is sheep wool, then it makes the fiber stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And you the elbows and the neck is usually where it would wear out. Most people, you know, most people wear it out there. So if you mix this into the alpaca fiber and make the whole garment with that, then it's definitely a year product or a lifetime product. Hmm. Right now, most of the products that you find of alpaca are through catalogs or on the internet. You don't see a lot of alpaca in the store.
And that's because the fiber
is not available. Right. It's not available. It's not readily available. You can get it in Peru and Chile and South America, but not in the U.S. It's not as available in the U.S.
Peru and Chile and where else did you say?
Bolivia. It's in the South American countries, Peru, Chile, Bolivia.
Are they mountain animals like in the Andes?
Yes, they're from the Andes, and they are mountain animals. They're related to the llama and the camel.
The camel?
Yes, they're a camelid.
A camelid?
A camelid is, yes, they're related to the camel and then the llama and then the alpaca. But the alpaca is smaller
mm-hmm.
than a llama. Its fiber is softer than a llama. But both of them are related to the camel, so they have a lot. Their stomachs are the same as a llama,
mm-hmm.
and they do spit like a camel.
What kind of animals are they? Would you call them gentle, docile? Are they more like sheep or more like deer in their temperament and? Just your interaction with them, what can you tell us?
Well, by nature they're skittish. They just prefer to graze and eat. But because we have become gentleman farmers with them and we're out with them, they've become our pets.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also we do show them. So we do put bridles on them and walk them.
You show them.
Yes.
Does that mean that there are competitions like dog shows?
Yes.
Oh, can you tell us about that?
Well, they're all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
Each state has their own association, and we have our local shows, and then there's international shows, and we also have the shows all over the country. We can go to California and be in a show. We have the Alpaca Owner Breeder Association
mm-hmm.
puts these shows on.
What would define a grand champion? You said a grand champion. What kind of, how is that quantified or judged, or how do they determine who is a grand champion? What would the animal have to do?
Well, they do classes, just like they do with horses, dogs, and you go into a color class, say an all white animal, all white, all black animal, or a mixed would be gray and black,
mm-hmm.
or an Appaluso. So they go into different classes, and then females, age groups, males, their age groups. And then they, just like the dog shows, they get ribbons. And it's for confirmation. Their legs are, you know, how straight their legs are, their teeth, their
how
ears,
they walk.
How they walk, yes. And the density of their fiber,
mm-hmm.
how much fiber they have per square inch. And so they look, you know, they split their fibers and look at how much. And then you also have, at the shows, they have different, you could send in their fiber previously, and their fiber is judged. So when you get there, you know what the density and the micro count of your fiber of the animal.
Do they do that under the microscope?
Yes, they do under a microscope. It's measured. I'm not quite sure. I haven't witnessed that,
mm-hmm.
so I'm not an authority on that. But it is per square inch, meaning that then you get. How many pounds you get off an animal? You usually get about 10 pounds off of an animal
hmm.
when you shear.
I used to be in the in the hair business years ago, in the beauty business, and they made a big thing about hair among humans and other animals, because we're animals too, and our hair has special cells that are, I think there's three layers of cells. One is called the cortex, and the other one, I've forgotten already, it was so long ago, but there's like three layers, and one of the inner cores carries the pigment. And when you're taking hair color to it, or you're putting permanent wave solution on it, what you're doing is you're softening that cortical layer, and then you're remodeling it to either be porous enough for the color to come out and change, or adding color in, permanent wave solution softens the cells, and they roll it around a permanent wave rod, which is really just a curler, and then it softens it. But then when it hardens, they have a neutralizer that will harden it. It has like a permanent curl. And when I looked at alpaca fur, it reminded me of people that have naturally curly hair.
Yes.
The little crinkles that you see,
right.
That's how people that have naturally curly hair.
Right. We call that crimp.
Crimp.
Yeah, crimp.
Is there a difference in the value if the hair is crimped?
The more crimp, the more wave, and the tighter it is,
yes.
The more you have. Yeah, it, the animal then is more valuable, yes.
Oh. Okay. If you wanted to sell one, what would an alpaca, single alpaca female go for?
Well, the babies, when they're born, are valued at $10,000 if she's a female.
Oh. Jeez.
And that's because she breeds. Whereas a male would be anywhere from $1,500 to $2,000. And then when he's 3 years old, you can tell that if his conformation, you would be able to tell by his color, his fiber, and his conformation. If he's a, then he would be a qualified stud.
I see. Tell me about their personalities. The alpacas that I visited with you on your farm were very gentle and docile. They reminded me actually of deer because they were very graceful. There was a wonderful feeling of peace around them. I didn't feel threatened by them in any way, even though they were all running for the fresh-cut hay. There was just something very serene about them that I've never experienced before with a group of animals. Are most alpacas like that?
Yes, I think so, especially being on farms. They know the routine. They know when the hay is coming or with the grain. They get a cup of grain a day, which has vitamins and minerals, and it's sweet.
Do they need friends? I mean, do they seem to make friends like humans do, or like pets in a family make friends?
Yes, I think they have, if you're referring to, do they have a buddy that they like?
Yes.
Yes. It's not real common, but when they're small, when they're just young,
mm-hmm.
they do have little buddies. They're real close to their mothers, and then, of course, the boys, they'll pick a playmate if there's several babies in your herd, and they will.
How compatible are they with horses?
They're very compatible with horses, and they're actually compatible with most farm animals.
Hmm. So you would describe them as friendly and gentle, and they really give you a very loving and peaceful, calm feeling when you're around them. It's very noticeable. Bev, what drew you to them in the first place?
Well, for me, it was their soulful eyes. I just could see their soul. I knew that they were gentle and they were calming. I knew that it was, something that I could do. I could farm because it was just their fiber that I was using.
Oh, yes, so you didn't have to kill them.
Right. And they were, they're just sort of little grateful animals. You know, they don't ask for much. They only eat approximately a bale and a half of hay a week,
mm-hmm.
a cup of grain a day,
mm-hmm.
and water. And other than that, they're just asking, you know, they're giving me a lot more than I'm able to give them.
So they're like, they become like family, like any pet.
Oh, absolutely.
You had an alpaca that I noticed when you were there, when I was there, that had blue eyes. How rare is that?
Well, it is rare, and it's not really recommended that we breed an alpaca with blue eyes because
mm-hmm.
the theory is that a lot of blue-eyed white alpacas are deaf. So some people wouldn't want them in their breeding program, and they would use them as a pet. And that's what you would do with most of your boys as well.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't have a good conformation and their fiber is good but not great, you can always sell their fiber and have them gilded as a male and just have them as a pet. A spinner would like to have those in their backyard because they're using it. They could breed a female alpaca with another stud and have a male companion for her at not a lot of cost, use his fiber, and have a business going.
Tell me about children and alpacas. Do children ever ride them? Or can they be ridden?
No, I wouldn't recommend that children ride them because number one, they would have to be trained to do that, and that's really not part of the business, so I wouldn't recommend it, even if it were a pet, and it would have to be a small child. We also have llamas on our farm, and they can carry
the llamas.
Pardon?
Tell us about the llamas.
The llamas are, they're larger than the alpaca.
Mm-hmm.
They outweigh them probably by 100 pounds. They have banana ears.
Mm-hmm.
Their fiber is more coarse. You can still use it to spin. You can have a llama sweater, and you can mix it with other wools as well. But llamas we use them to guard the alpacas because they're more aware of the surrounding areas and predators.
I wonder if I should have asked the llama when I was there about their ears. Because when I talk to donkeys about their ears, they have what's called telescopic hearing,
mm-hmm.
and they can have different ways that they move their ears to focus in on certain distances. For example, if I talk to a donkey and it's in a barn, they will tell me and ask them to send me what they're hearing. I can hear the sound inside the barn only. And then I say, well, what about outside? And then they'll send me the sound that they're picking up just outside of the barn, but not inside of the barn.
Hmm.
And then I say, well, what about long distance? And they sent me sounds that were long distance, like the background of a train. And you could tell, I don't know how I knew, but I knew that the sound was coming from about 4 or 5 miles away. It's just part of the information they sent me when they sent me the sound. So they can eliminate or filter out or ignore sounds in their certain vicinities within certain distances to the exclusivity of one, say, at a far distance. What it sounded like was like being on top of a tall building where you can no longer hear the sound. Around the base of the building, like people walking and cars, because you're up too high. But you can hear sounds in the distance, like the ocean or trains or airplanes, or things that are farther away, but you can't hear what's close. It was that kind of an experience. And I wondered that about their ears, since they're banana-shaped, which is very unusual, very attractive. But I wondered if you knew anything about that. Did they have special hearing? That you know of?
Well, I don't know that they do, but I know that they hear and see me before the alpacas do, as they do if I'm out there working with them and there's a squirrel or a little animal, a cat or a bunny coming in. They're much more aware of what's happening around them.
So they have a greater distance.
Yes, they do.
In hearing.
Yes.
Whereas the alpacas...
And the other thing I notice about the llamas, if you have people in and there's a lot of activity going on and somebody gets away from the group, they're able to keep an eye on who left the group and who's still in the group and maybe another car that drove in. They just have this instinct to know everything that's going on.
What's the name of the one llama that that was up front?
Smooch?
No, the first one. It's called
Cleopatra.
Cleopatra. Let me see if I can connect with Cleopatra now and ask her about her hearing. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Hold on, and I'll see if I can ask her.
Okay.
Cleopatra. Hi, darling. It's Aunt Agnes. I'm talking with your mom on the phone. Yeah, and then there's people listening to us talking about llamas. Is it okay if we ask you a couple of questions? She says, okay. Cleopatra, honey, could you tell us about your hearing? Could you send me that sound that you're hearing right now at the farm? Okay, the only thing I'm hearing right now from her is just the activity in the enclosed area where the alpaca are. Sweetheart, can you change your hearing to pick up sounds that are farther away? Okay, she says that they have they can hear the forest animals that are farther out, and she just did the same thing. She filtered out the sound that she was sending me of the immediate environment, and I can hear now from her sounds that are outside, a little farther out, but I'm not hearing cars and things. Okay, what about a little farther? Beverly says that when she comes with the car, you know right away that she's coming. Is it that you hear the car, or are you reading her intention? She's reading your intention. Okay, so how soon do you read that intention? Okay, as soon as she makes the decision to come, then I hear her either walking or driving her car, and I know I'm expecting her. So then I look for her. So it's very similar to the donkey. They have a variety of distances that they can focus on to by turning their ears in a certain way. Sweetheart, tell me, Cleopatra, tell me, do you know why your ears have a banana shape like they're curved? Oh, that's a silly question. She says, because that's how we pick up the sound waves, because waves are curved.
Oh.
She's right. Dumb question, right? Sorry, Cleopatra, that was a dumb question for me. Okay. She says, I forgive you. Cleopatra is a very sort of regal llama that comes from sort of a, she's got the air of a llama that comes from a very royal line. She has that kind of attitude. That's a perfect name for her, Cleopatra. She she says, why do you want to know all this? Because people are listening to us talk, and they're fascinated with llamas and alpacas, and they would like to know a little more about them. Well, it's a little unusual in the United States where we live, honey. And so people love animals, and they would like to get to know them better. Okay. Is it okay if I ask you one more question, honey? She says yes. I'm interested in what we refer to as spirituality. Can you tell us what that means to you? Can you tell us about your connection with sort of the divine or a higher presence? Or I think you know what I'm talking about. You're connected with the One. Okay. She says we're all connected with the One, and meaning the Great One. And everyone in the herd is connected. Who would be the oversoul of the herd in Beverly's yard, in Beverly's farm? Okay. She's saying she thinks, she's not sure, but she thinks it's that one that's gray and white, that real pretty one.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot his name.
Hercules?
It's a him. It's a male.
Yeah. Hercules.
What's his name?
Mm-hmm.
Beth?
Yes, it's Hercules, I think.
Hercules, okay. Is it Hercules, honey? Okay. She says it is Hercules. Hercules is like the oversoul. In other words, if you talk to the, you can't talk to one of them if they're in a group. You have to talk to the group. And the group has an oversoul that sort of connects them all and makes them, you know, travel in herds and like birds fly in unison and so on. And she says it's Hercules. It's the gray and the white one.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yeah, what do you do about veterinarians? I know a lot of veterinarians, but none of them that I've talked to know anything about alpacas.
Well, the two vets that I'm aware of that we use are equine vets that have they only do the camelid now. They come in their truck to our farm. And they check the whole herd. They do the ultrasounds on the pregnant females.
Mm-hmm.
We worm them once a month, but most of us do that ourselves after we learn how to do the shots. But they come and check the pregnancies. Because it's a year pregnancy, we want to make sure they're healthy. And
did you say a year pregnancy?
Yes. The gestation is 11 and a half months, and some carry them 12, the full 12 months. So
oh my.
You don't want to assume that they're pregnant. And so we have equine vets that have gone into this camelid study, and Ohio State is very active in it. And they
Ohio State University?
Ohio State
Veterinary
University.
Medicine?
Yes, yes,
yes.
Anybody that has any real issues, you know, we go to Ohio State and
mm-hmm.
Take the animal there. But they're actually very easy. They're healthy. They're just healthy animals. They're stoic, and you don't know that they're sick usually until they're really sick. But with us being out there every day, we notice all the little things that go wrong, and we're
mm-hmm.
pretty educated in reading and the groups that we belong to, so we do know what to look for. But if there's any big issues, then we go to Ohio State. Dr. Evans has done lots of things in preparing food for them in this country because over there they just eat the vegetation that's available in South America,
mm-hmm.
you know, rocks that are that's where they get their minerals and so forth. So they've tried to duplicate that in the grain.
So what do you actually feed them as hay or as their main food?
Their main food is second cutting hay because it's softer. They like timothy. It has alfalfa in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they graze on your grass. So we also try to plant timothy and alfalfa in our grass. They don't eat the root. They don't pull the grass root out. They only eat the top.
Mm-hmm.
So you can reseed and rotate the pastures. Depending on how many you have, you would have to rotate, you know, I try to rotate every week and give the pasture a rest,
mm-hmm.
so that it can grow and water and then reseed throughout the summer.
Oh, so you have different areas of confinement?
Yes, we have. Well, you can section it off.
Yes.
So that, you know, you need 1 acre per 7 alpacas.
1 acre, wow.
1 acre.
For 7 alpacas. How many alpacas do you have? There were quite a few there.
We had 28.
28.
Yes.
Because you had the boys separated from the girls, and then the llamas were sort of intermixed, and that one handsome guy was separate. He was pacing around. What are the veterans? You told me they were eating some kind of grain, a cup of grain a day. What kind of grain? Is it corn?
I don't know who actually makes that, because it's a new Buckeye is the name of the company that makes it. But the formula has come from Ohio State. They were imported in 1984, and they didn't know a lot about them. So that's when they started doing all the research, and Ohio State's done a wonderful job of doing research to see what we needed to feed them,
mm-hmm.
to provide them with a healthy diet.
Do you give them, like, molasses or anything like to give horses?
No, we don't. What they have does have a sweet taste to it.
Uh-huh.
But it's not molasses.
Okay, but it is a sort of a mixed grain.
Yes.
We
can get it. We get it in pellets.
Oh, I see. Okay, so tell us about the breeding of alpacas. You just pick a nice female and a nice male, and you put them together. Do they go into some sort of heat period like dogs and horses and cows?
No, they do not. They're like rabbits. They when a male breeds with a female, they're drippers. And they mount her. We put them in a 10-by-10 area.
Mm-hmm.
And she cushes, which means she lays down on all fours.
Yeah.
And he mounts her, and it's fairly easy. You don't have to usually do anything. And they breed for about 20 to 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
When he ovulates, she then drops her egg within 24 hours.
I see.
And that starts the ovulation, and so you can breed any time of the year.
Oh, any time of the year.
Yes. Most of us in Ohio like to breed so that they have spring babies, because then you don't have weather conditions.
Yeah, that would be very difficult to give birth in the wintertime.
Right.
The baby would be, it because they don't regulate their temperatures until they're over a month old.
Right.
It's just like humans. And that would be hard to keep a baby warm.
Right.
You told me something about that when they give birth before 3 in the afternoon. That totally blew me away, because they may have a certain biorhythm that works, but then it can be shut off, because most people or most animals have diurnal rhythms, that a certain time of the day they, you know, certain hormones are secreted, and at night when they need to sleep, more serotonin is secreted, and so on. But I was kind of shocked by that. Do you happen to know the mechanism by how that works?
I don't know how it works and the mechanism. I just know the vet said if they're not here by 3, don't wait up for it. Go to bed. It'll be here the next day. because we, when we breed, we bring the male back in a week mm-hmm. after they've bred. If she spits him off, we assume she's pregnant.
Oh.
If she lets him mount her again, then we let them breed again. And then
I
we
see.
Can bring them back again in a week. When she spits him off, we assume she's pregnant. Then we have the vet out. He does a progesterone count with a blood draw. And then in 3 months, we ultrasound to see if it's a healthy pregnancy. So we're pretty accurate on the expectations of when the baby will come.
Mm-hmm.
So we start checking, and she starts to act differently. She'll get a little quieter. She'll lay around a little more.
Mm-hmm.
So we keep her in another area. We can keep a better watch on when they're going to have them.
Yeah, she's probably having hormone changes. And interesting from a biochemical point of view.
Right.
I'd like to invite callers to call in with questions. The number is 877-876-5227, and we're talking with Beverly Kiff. And if any of you out there have experience with alpacas or just have questions, we'd love to hear from you. Tell me about the financial incentives in raising alpacas. So if I have, say I have 3 acres, okay, and I have a little house on it, and I decide that I want to raise some alpacas just as pets, that wouldn't qualify me for a reduction in real estate taxes or anything, would it?
No.
Okay,
no.
But if I can prove that I'm doing it to farm them and to breed them as farm animals, would that qualify me?
Yes, if you prove that you're doing it to sell the animals and it's a husbandry business, you would qualify.
What I like about it is they don't have to die.
No. No, you're actually creating more.
Yes. I like it because, when you raise chickens, they're going to go for food. If you raise cows, eventually they're going to go for food. And, I remember from doing research that it always hurt me to put an animal down, even though my animals lived their entire life and all I did was measure their breathing. It's still, I always felt very bad about putting them down. And I can't imagine, I get so attached to my animals, I can't imagine raising an animal, even a duck, and then having it go for somebody's dinner.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I could do it. Now, a lot of people, obviously they're farmers and they supply us with food. But personally, I don't think I could handle that. I loved it when you told me that they just live out their lives and the value in them is not their flesh. The value is their fur or their fiber.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a wonderful animal to raise because they're very gentle. They're very friendly. They're non-threatening. And they really are very sweet animals. And you don't have to kill them. That's a wonderful, I would love that. That would be an ideal farm for a person like me,
mm-hmm.
is to have alpacas. Because I don't think I could get rid of any animal.
No. I know a farmer that did have cows, and they did farm them for meat, and the grandfather did that. And then when the father that now has alpacas, and he said, we decided we wanted to work the farm, but we the children wouldn't allow us to have anything that we would kill.
I know my grandmother had a farm, and they would have cows, and they would have turkeys and geese and everything, and I would make friends with them. And then the next thing I know, they're on the plate for Thanksgiving dinner, and that always hurt my heart. Well, I suppose I was kind of a weird kid. I just loved being around the animals, and to me, I wondered about their families, and I would go out and talk to them. But it always hurt me that we would be eating a friend of mine.
Right.
And, of course, you know, she would slaughter a cow, and we would have the beef, or they would kill a pig, and then they would, it's a big deal to smoke the meat and all that kind of stuff. I don't know how, well, they were farmers from over in Hungary, so naturally they knew how to do that. But then, you know, at the turn of the century, when they came over here, that's how everybody lived, because we were all farmers. And when I was born in the 30s, it was still primarily agricultural. And so we grew up on the farm knowing that certain animals were going to be killed or whatever, and we were out there planting and everything. But it's so different now. People feel so differently about animals now. When I communicated with your animals, I found them to be very similar in their gentleness as I did the buffalo. When I talked to buffalo, and I talked to a buffalo in southern Ohio, there's a place in Berlin that is a private zoo of a farmer, an Amish farmer. And you can go there and you take the kids and everything. And these animals are out in the wild. It's a private park, and they come up to the wagons, and you can feed them. They're very gentle. And they had some buffalo there, and I went there, and I asked permission of this buffalo to speak to him. And he said to me, I said, oh, my goodness, I never dreamed that an animal your size could be so gentle. And he said to me, you know, just understand that you are in the presence of the Great One. Meaning what he called it, the Great Spirit, and that my gentleness comes from the Great One. And it was like waves and waves of calmness and peace and comfort and security came over me. When I talked to the alpacas, I got the same feeling that they were like mystical or they were sacred. And I was surprised touching them, how very gentle they are in the sense of warmth and love that I got that was emanating from them. It just caused my whole body to be peaceful. It was really incredible. There's sort of a mysticism about them. Are you aware of this, or have you?
Yes.
What has been your experience and your impression of them when you're in their presence?
Well, I think they are mystical. I know they can lower your blood pressure.
Mm.
I know that you can, if you go out there and just ground with them,
mm-hmm.
it can happen faster because they are so at peace. If they get excited with a little critter coming in or whatever, if I can rhythmically breathe,
mm-hmm.
and just stay calm, then they get calmer faster. I mean, we're good for each other. It's very rewarding. I get so much more from them from every day working with them.
It's almost therapeutic.
Absolutely therapeutic, yes.
And when I was among them and they were all trying to get something to eat, but they weren't shoving me or pushing me. They were just all around me, and I just felt like I was with my family or you know, my sister's grandchildren. It felt so normal to be with them.
Right.
And it was so quiet. And some of them are large animals. And I'm usually a little threatened by larger animals because of the injuries to my back and my neck. But it was like they had the ultimate courtesy. And, you know, they walked around you. They didn't go to knock you over or push you aside because they were going for their hay. I was totally impressed. I had never seen that in a herd of animals of any kind. And I'm sure you feel that all the time because you go out there and you're right among them. And is it like your family when you go out there?
Absolutely. And because they're grazing animals,
yes,
they're much more interested in going to get their hay after they've been on their grass. So they want to avoid me. At that moment, they're going to eat. But when their tummies are full and they're chewing their cud and
mm-hmm.
laying around, they're just wonderful. And they, you know, I can go sit by them.
Yes.
you can rub their, I know a lot of alpaca owners, you can't, they don't want to be touched, but several of mine, if they're laying around, I can rub their necks and their back.
Mm-hmm.
I have one that loves to have his back scratched, and but you can halter them and walk them. You can take them to events, you know, if you have like well, they're at the county fairs, but if you have a school event and no one's seen an alpaca, you can just take your little 10x10 pen and take a few alpacas there, and people, they'll allow you to pet them, especially if they're on the lead.
Oh.
If they're in the field and they're eating and they're doing their thing, then they want to be doing their thing. But if you
right.
have them on a lead, they'll let you touch them and pet them.
But that must be fun for the school kids.
It is, yes. Absolutely, because they've never seen an alpaca. They don't.
No, they're certainly unique.
Right.
What a very special animal. It was a thrill to mingle with them.
It is, and they're good mothers. They love their babies. They nurse 6 months, and
mm-hmm.
you breed them 18 days after they give birth to their infant, and then their first they take care of their baby that they're nursing, and then as the pregnancy grows, the vet said, then that's the second thing they take care of. And as in life, the mother is the one that gets the less care. She's more concerned about her baby on the ground and the baby in her belly.
Right.
So they're very nurturing.
Yes, very feminine. Very loving. I was totally amazed. I had been with alpacas before, but only a group of three. And they were in a barn in a place in Pennsylvania where I went to have a workshop in animal communication. And I was very taken by them there, too, and I was able just to sit down on the straw and have them, actually, they sat down with me, and I had this conversation with them, and it was like four or five friends having a cup of coffee together. It was so natural, and it was so comforting, and it was so pleasant. I don't know any other animal that I've experienced that is sort of in the wild like that. I have to take a break here. I have to do a commercial. This program is sponsored by Garnett Publishing in Cleveland, Ohio. If your church or organization is looking for a fundraising project, why not have your members get together and contribute their favorite recipes and publish your organization's own cookbook? Our church did it, and it was really fun. Some ladies even wrote a paragraph about how long the recipe was in their family and the special days that the dish was served as a tradition. I contributed a number of my mother's wonderful Hungarian recipes, and also some from every member of my family that went into the book. It was really fun. You can visit Garnett's website at www.garnettpublishing.com. You can also call them at 216-458-6100. Be sure to listen to my friend Atira Hatton on BBS Radio on Thursday evenings at 7. This week she's going to her show is called Metaphysical Straight Talk. This week she's going to have Gary Harden, who is a co-author of The Days of Wonder, a wonderful book, I can tell you. And Atira is in quite a large amount of the book because she talks about the earth changes and what they mean. Atira is a gifted psychic and an angelic mystic, and she was associated with the Edgar Cayce Association for the Research Enlightenment. She is a sought-after speaker on spirituality and metaphysics, and she's a really, really, really loving person and friend. And she's incredibly accurate. She's on at 7 p.m. on Thursday nights on BBS Radio, and her show is called Metaphysical Straight Talk. Well, Beverly, this has been fun. What else can you What advice would you give if somebody would be interested in becoming an alpaca farmer, and how can they get in touch with you?
Well, we have a website. We have actually, our name was Alpacas of St. Joseph, and that www.alpacasofstjoseph, we can be reached that way.
Okay.
And we have another farm that we started, and it's Alpacas of Hobnobbing Farm. That doesn't have a website yet, but they can reach me by phone.
Okay.
And I can give them my number.
Okay. It's, and your email, too.
And my email is beverlyjacobs1@sbcglobal.net. When I got into the business, I was so excited to get these furry little animals with this wonderful furry face.
Oh, yes.
That, it's looking at it now, I probably would do it differently. I bought 4 pregnant females.
Mm-hmm.
We were very lucky. We had 3 girls and 1 boy. So in a year, we had grown our herd from 4 to 8.
Mm-hmm.
So
how many years have you been in this business?
5 years.
5 years. Okay. How long does it take to actually become a viable resource for vendors who want to buy the fur?
Well, like I said in the beginning, there is a co-op that will take our fur, and then we get products for that, a pack of garments, be it a sweater or scarf or hat.
Mm-hmm.
When the co-op puts it out for bid, it usually goes to Peru or Chile. They usually win the bid for, and then it's processed there and sent back to us in garments, one way or another. That's why we're trying so hard to get our own enough alpaca to produce it here. That we have a lot of local farmers that have spinners that produce the products.
They produce the fiber into yarn?
Yes, right. They spin it and they produce yarn and then they make the garments. And a lot of them have their own garments for sale at the farm. They have their own little shops.
I see. Once it's processed and made into a fiber that can be woven or whatever, then you sell the finished product.
Correct.
Is that how you make your money?
Yes.
So you make it into garments. Somebody ought to make it into a prayer rug. That would be fabulous. I would love to have an alpaca prayer rug.
That would be wonderful. It would be spiritual, that's for sure.
It would be. You know, it's first of all, they're very spiritual beings. And in the old days, they used to have, or the ancient times, they used to take cat fur and they would save it. And they would weave it into little prayer rugs. And they're quite expensive. But I think that would be, well, first of all, the softness and the beauty, and there are several colors that could be woven into a beautiful pattern. I think that would make a beautiful, beautiful prayer rug. And, of course, prayer rugs are not that big, but that would be a beautiful thing to have in your home, in your living room, and then when you're ready to pray or to meditate, to have that. I think that would be fabulous. That would be a great idea. Do you take orders? I mean, once you have the yarn, do you have people that say, I would like a coat or I would like a scarf made out of it or whatever? Do you have people that call you for orders?
Yes, we do. And I have a friend that can make the garments. And I think it's fun to have a garment made out of the animal and we can know the name of it.
You know
the animal's name is Cleopatra, and we have her sweater.
That's right. So you could have a fur coat without being a fur coat.
Right, right.
So you could still wear their luxurious fur without having the animal die to get
That's
it.
That's right.
That's a splendid idea. I wish that would happen.
Yes. And I think the animals are happy to have that fur off of them because they get so hot in the summer.
Yeah, they get really hot, and you know, it's a relief, and it serves them well in the wintertime. Do you know what they happen to know what they clean the fur with when they process it?
Well, they call it carding, and it can be washed, but if you put it in the washer and you spin it, it turns into felt, so you don't want to do that.
Into felt?
Yes.
So it compresses and mats, right?
Right. It mats into felt, so you don't want to spin it in a washer. But
so
you
if it melts into into felt, that means that it must have a cortical layer very similar to human hair, because it wouldn't mat if it was like non-porous. I should have asked you for a piece of it to look under the microscope. I'm very interested in that kind of stuff because I was in that business. Let me tell the listeners that if they would like a personal consultation with me and for your animals, my fee is $35 for 20 minutes or $50 for a half hour. And you can contact me at talktopets@aol.com. And I want to thank Cleopatra, if you're still listening, honey. Thank you for giving us that information tonight. That is very, very important information, and I appreciate that you talked to me. She says it was a pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much, honey, for talking to me. You're very sweet. Okay, and Bev, I want to thank you very much for being our guest tonight. This was very informative. Please give us again your email address.
It's BeverlyJacobs1@sbcglobal.net.
Okay, and if anyone is interested in becoming involved in raising alpacas, they are certainly welcome to get in touch with you. You're living at the Bed and Breakfast?
Yes.
Okay, it's Marigold's Bed and Breakfast. And is there a phone number they can reach you?
Yes, it's 729-4001.
Okay.
440-729-4001.
And tell us again about the Ohio State School of Veterinary Medicine, their involvement in this. They're trying to better understand the biochemistry, especially is very important because different animals have different biochemistry. And when veterinarians go to school, they have to learn like 8 different ones, and one of them being the cat or the dog and the horse and some other ones that would be in their area. But this is very new to them. And could you tell me they have a program that they're trying to investigate and find out the biochemistry of, and just sort of the whatever the nuances are of internal medicine in alpacas?
Right. It's a camelid, they've only had them here for 22 years. So they do a lot of research on their biochemistry and the birthing of the animals. They have you can donate to the research alpaca registry because they're all DNA tested.
How do you find out how to donate to them? Do you just look up Ohio State University School of Veterinary Medicine?
Yes.
And then
yes.
You look for alpaca research or?
Yeah, we have an International Camelid Institute, and it's ICI.
Uh-huh.
And we send it to Alpaca Research Foundation.
I see. Okay, but you can do this through the School of Veterinary Medicine.
I think you could do that through them as well. I know we do it as members, and when we register our alpacas, we are able to donate.
Okay, and what's the name of that organization?
Alpaca Research Foundation.
The Alpaca Research Foundation. Okay, that would be very, very interesting and certainly a very worthwhile cause. Well, we are run out of time. And so I have to say good night and thank you again for being here. And this is Dr. Agnes saying good night. And remember, your animal companions are living beings sent to us by the universe. Honor them as such.
Good night.